south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander...
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
All right, let's start with something easy and practical. An email from Dave, number 56. Yeah, that's what he says. He's number 56. I beg to differ. I think he's Dave, number 59. But working his way up with a bullet. He says, hey, Johnny, you mentioned a couple of weeks ago the use of skylights in Latin America against humidity and mold. Are you maybe talking about open skylights that let the steam out when you crank the handle? Dave says, I don't really understand the mechanism, but I'm curious and I want to learn. Thanks so much, Johnny. Signed, Dave, number 56. Hey, Dave, thanks for that. And skylights in Latin America. I love that subject because it's really so simple, but people make such a complicated subject out of it. You know, the first thing you hear, down here anyway, when people discuss skylights is they leak. They all leak. Yep, they practically all leak. It's true. Sometimes you hear people up in the States say that too, but not so much. That's a problem skylight manufacturers licked up in the States anyway a long time ago. Thing is, when it comes to skylights, there are two kinds of leaks. One kind of leak, and the main kind of leak up in the States, is being installed incorrectly, or an installation problem. The other kind of leak that prevails is from one of those skylights that opens, you know, cranking it open, cranking it shut. It can be after some time you get a leaky seal. Now, one thing you have to know, when you buy a skylight up in the States, they're really expensive compared to the typical skylights you see here in Latin America, which are basically polycarbonate or plastic or Lexan domes. Up in the States and in Canada, lots of companies sell very expensive skylights. Well, the mechanical ones, the ones that open and close with a crank or when you push on them with a stick, whatever. Even the smallest ones, you know, where the glass is maybe only 1 foot by 2 foot in a tiny bathroom, it's going to cost minimal, $300 or $400. And a big-ass, substantial skylight that's maybe 6 foot by 4 foot could cost a grand or more. That's because up in the States, the code is that they have to be double or triple glazed, which makes a skylight really heavy, too, as in weight, which makes them difficult to set correctly on a roof, especially an angled roof. That means most times you can't do it yourself. You have to bring in installation professionals, and that'll cost you a couple $100, too. However, in Latin America, on the skylight issue, things are so much simpler and so much less expensive. For one thing, there are no building codes involving skylights. At least I've never seen any, and they don't require double or triple pane either. I say forget about having a mechanical skylight that opens and closes. Just get a stationary skylight. I mean one that won't open and close. It's just sealed shut. Now, when you drive around the burbs of Latin America, you'll see skylights here and there. Not usually the flat pane type, you know, flat piece of glass. We're talking about the bubble kind. You'll see plastic dome bubbles. And it seems like in every medium and large size Latin American city, there's a manufacturer or two or three of those types of plastic domes. They use various materials, plexiglass, Lexan, polycarbonate. And down here in Latin America, if you're building a house from scratch, it's so simple to set it up for skylights. Flat roof, angled roof, it doesn't make a difference. Most quality construction of houses or buildings here have a poured concrete roof. And skylights are a good choice for that kind of roof. I know you heard me say in a previous show you should put a skylight in every room. Of course, that means if you have a two-story house or building, your skylights will all be situated for the second floor rooms. There's no way to have skylights on the first level. But that doesn't really matter because even if there are no skylights on the first floor, if you leave your doors open during the day and let the air flow and circulate throughout your building, the second floor skylights will burn off all the humidity. And believe me, you don't need to have stark sunlight the whole day. Just an hour is enough. With the sun so hot and intense down here, even just an hour's worth of sun through your skylights will burn away an entire day's humidity. It's hard to explain. You have to experience it yourself. Besides that, there's nothing like the connection you have with the outdoors with skylights. In fact, that's one of the major gringo expat complaints about houses here in Latin America. they're generally just dark, dank, and dismal. Even though just a few skylights will completely change that look, most people don't do it. So anyway, if you're building a house, you tell your roofing contractor how big you want your skylights, and he'll build up a little 3 or 4 inch tall concrete border outlining a simple square opening. And your skylight will sit right on it like a loose bottle cap on a bottle. So anyway, when your contractor's done pouring the roof and it's solid and dry, you just grab your tape measure, measure the outside perimeter on that built-up concrete rectangle or square, take those measurements down to the skylight place, and they'll make you up the appropriate-sized domed skylight. One problem, though. In time, after year 2, 3, or 5, they all leak. Now, they don't leak because they're a bad design. They're formed out of one solid piece of plastic. They don't leak because the rainy season is intense, though it is. They leak because the idiot installers down here in Latin America drill holes through the perimeter lip of the skylight to fasten it with screws to the concrete. Man, I'm telling you, you know I'm not from down here in Latin America, but I could see in a second, the first time I built a house, that the contractors do things the way they do things, the way they've been doing them for years and years, and somehow they don't realize they're the problem. They're the cause of the leaks, but they don't care because when they're done and off the job, the leak doesn't come for a year or 2 or 5, and they're no longer around. There's no callbacks. There's no guarantees, not after 2, 3, 4, or 5 years. Oh, and when it comes to construction guarantees, that's a hairy subject. Contractors down here will promise you anything. They'll even give you a nice 1, 2, or 3 year guarantee, signed and sealed. Though I've yet to see anyone with a claim collect on it. Anyway, on the first house that I built, within 3 to 5 years, all of my skylights leaked. I think I had maybe 6 skylights total. So then what did I do? I took them off and did the usual Rube Goldberg fix they do with all skylight leaks down here in Latin America. I took a caulk gun and siliconed the hell out of the perimeter. Then replaced the skylight on top of the wet caulk so it smeared into the perimeter. An ugly mess for sure, but usually and luckily you can't see the mess from the rooms inside looking up at the skylight. You have to be on the roof to see that mess. Yep, that's how Latin Americans fix skylight roof leaks. Or any kind of leak, plumbing, gutters, you name it, they'll glop silicone on it. And though it actually may work for a month or two, or even a year, or more, the result is extremely ugly. So I learned my lesson on that first house. And for my second house, I thought, I'm not going to let this happen again. I'm going to be smart. When the contractor placed the skylights this time, I went to the hardware store and bought a roll of that spongy-looking closed-cell weather stripping, the stuff that has an adhesive backing and you pull off the tab and there's a sticky side to it. So before they attached the skylights, I laid down some of that weather stripping along that concrete border perimeter. So the skylights rested on a permanent little 1/8 inch cushion of weather stripping. And yes, that absolutely did the trick. There were no leaks around the perimeter of the skylight, but there were still leaks. This time, coming from the holes that the contractors drilled into the perimeter of the skylights for the fastening screws. Because the thing is, you see, from day to night, the skylight expands and contracts. It gets really hot in the day and cold at night, which eventually creates more and more of a little gap where the screw penetrates the rim of the skylight. That's when finally a light went off in my head. I thought the only way to stop these things from permanently leaking is to never penetrate the plastic with any kind of drill or screw at all. They have to be installed in one piece without modifying the plastic at all. But how do you do that? Sure, you could sort of glue them down with a silicone caulk bead. But that's really messy, and you get that expansion and contraction from day to night. Eventually, that caulk's going to separate, and you'll get a leak again. By the way, the kind of leaks you get around the perimeter are usually due to driving rain. It slams up against the roof. Then the rain bounces back up under the skylight lip, works its way under the perimeter, and now it's dripping on your dining room table. And you know, there's nothing more aggravating than having to put little Tupperware dishes around the house every time it rains. Can't tell you how many Latino, even gringo houses I've been to where I've seen that action. Restaurants, grocery stores, and commercial centers, too. Oops, sorry about that. And Murphy's Law would always have it. Do you remember that guy, Murphy? You boomers do. Murphy's Law would have it that all your drips will most often land on something that could be permanently damaged. Like your piano keyboard or leather sofa. So anyway, with the third house I built and all the rest of the houses thereafter, I never had a skylight leak again because I developed a simple and dirty way to clamp the skylights to the perimeter concrete base without making a single hole in the skylight plastic frame at all. Now, think of a Grolsch beer bottle. Remember those? An expensive European beer, Grolsch, G-R-O-L-S-H. They're expensive because the bottle's so cool. They've got a resealable cap. The only beer bottle I know of with a resealable cap. Well, that's kind of the system I developed for my skylights, though much simpler. In fact, when I had my solar hot water heater installed, you know, they install that. That's part of the deal. I remember the installers, they put that big hot water unit very close to one of the big skylights. I remember one of the two guys walked over and inspected the clips I used to fasten down the skylight. He said, "Man, that's a great idea. I never saw that before. Where'd you get those clips? Where can I buy some?" I said, "You can't buy them, not the way you see them there." I cut and fastened those myself out of 1.5-inch thin wall electric conduit pipe straps. Anyway, not to get into too much detail here, I showed him how to do it, and I'm sure elsewhere throughout Latin America, some smart roofing guy, probably him and his buddies, are doing the right thing with their skylight fastening technique and saving themselves a world of grief in callbacks. And of course, secondarily, they're keeping their clients happy too. The question is, why does it take some gringo born and raised in Chicago to figure out a cheap and dirty solution to an age-old problem that should have been solved years, if not decades ago? You know, sometimes I think one of the best and worst inventions of all was silicone caulk. It ranks right up there with duct tape in being the universal repair material that really, in the end, only makes things worse. And here in Latin America, man, they criminally overuse this stuff. Duct tape, not so much. But silicone caulk, there's an evil epidemic of it. Man, I'll tell you, every roof, gutter, and skylight is weighed down by gallons of the stuff. Oh, and cars too. Especially after a fender bender when two parts don't exactly fit together anymore. And the idiot driver doesn't have the dough to get it fixed right. Especially when it comes to headlight and taillight housings. You see it with taxis and public transportation all the time. With all the fender benders they get into, if it weren't for silicone caulk and duct tape, there'd be car parts strewn along every highway. Wait a minute. Sometimes there are. And man, you should see how Latinos glom that stuff on plumbing pipes. And you know, it's not recommended for plumbing pipes or fixtures. But man, I'll tell you, if you're renting, have a look under your sink. That's the first thing Latinos will do when there's a plumbing leak. And there's always a leak. They'll slather on some silicone caulk, which will work for a while if there's just a tiny leak and there's no water pressure. But even then, give it a couple months and it'll start leaking again. Again, it's all about the expansion and contraction of pipes using hot and cold water at different times. You know, if those white plastic PVC pipes under your sink are leaking, you should always rip them out and replace them with new ones. It's the only leak-proof, guaranteed way to fix things. But almost no one here in Latin America ever does that. Not when they could run out to the corner hardware store, called a ferreteria, by the way, and pick up a roll of duct tape and silicone caulk for $3 or $4. Oh, by the way, us engineering, techies, and nerd types, we can always tell if someone's got a liberal arts degree, or if a person has little interest in science or how the world really works, when they refer to the word Silicon Valley as Silicon Valley. Big difference. It certainly separates the shit-for-brains non-scientific types from persons who actually have a bit of knowledge about the physical world. Well, guess what? Silicon Valley. There ain't no such thing. Unless you're talking about underground Hollywood studios where they shoot porno flicks. Silicone is what they use in boob jobs. Silicon, as in Silicon Valley, is what they use in solar cells and microchips. Silicon is an actual element on the periodic table. Your cell phone has millions upon millions of silicon chips and gates. Gates, not in that fat schlump doofus Bill Gates. We're talking about mathematical Boolean gates if you took any computer math. Now, silicone, the stuff they have in caulk guns and in boobs, is not an element to be found on the periodic table. It's a plastic polymer. That's why, often when I'm in a conversation with a reasonably intelligent person and they use the term Silicon Valley, I can't help lumping them into the same category as people who use the word irregardless. Same with the clueless artsy-fartsy people who pronounce the word chromosome as chromazone. Sorry, folks, ain't no Z in chromosome. Oh, and those liberal scientific know-nothings who nuclear energy. It's not nuclear energy, it's nuclear energy. I mean, look, the word's only been repeated over and over in every daily newspaper for 75 years, and you still can't say nuclear? Come on, watch a YouTube, read a book. Again, it's not nuclear, but nuclear. However, all of us can be forgiven for the word Caribbean versus Caribbean. The literary world seems to be split on that. Then again, there's aluminum and aluminium. A spot-on way to spot a Brit, as they say. But I digress. Where were we? Regardless of the fact that occasionally very smart people use the word irregardless, you have to wonder why some even really smart people haven't figured that one out yet. Maybe because people just don't like to correct a smart guy. However, if your mother happens to be an English professor like mine is, she'd have no problem correcting the Pope if he f***ed up. Now, as for me, when I screw up in Spanish, and I do it all the time, I have a fallback position. I always say, look, it's my second language. Cut me some slack. I'll tell you what the problem is. Sometimes days, even weeks go by, and I don't have a single English conversation with anybody. Not face-to-face, anyway. Sometimes when I'm around, nothing but Spanish-speaking people. I don't quite get everything they're talking about, and I'll say, hey, would you repeat that? And sometimes, for example, my girlfriend, who's heard me say that a million times, she'll give me that kind of look, you know, an eye roll. She'll repeat it, slowing down a bit, in a slightly edgy way, not registering that it is my second language. How would anyone realize that if we're never speaking English, just Spanish? How would they know I'm not getting 100% of what they're talking about? Besides that, I know after all those years standing in front of a big bass amp, I'm a little bit deaf. Not enough to get a hearing aid or anything, at least I don't think so. Though I have had girlfriends tell me I should look into one. But you know how most guys are. We're stubborn about things like that. And sometimes, you know, especially at parties where they're blasting out that reggaeton trash, it's sort of an advantage to be slightly deaf. By the way, speaking of slightly deaf or even lost in translation, here's one thing I've noticed that most people probably haven't picked up on. When there's a gringo or expat who speaks pretty decent Spanish, or enough to get by, if he or she doesn't quite get all what's being said, doesn't help there are a couple of different versions of local Spanish. The proper schoolbook version, the Spanish you might converse with your family around the house with, and street Spanish, which is loaded with slang words and sloppy usage. Sometimes they'll truncate the word, there won't be an ending. Like, for example, the word restaurant is restaurante. On the street, they'll say restaurant. They'll finish with the end and cut off the T-E completely. Beware of that. Or, for example, resort, you know, all-inclusive resort. They'll say resort. They'll cut off the T. So, for example, if you're in a crowd on the street or in a cab or talking to your Uber driver, he might lop off the ending of every fourth or fifth word. And where are you going to be if your Spanish isn't that great? But plenty good to talk to someone formally, like if you're conversing with a teller at a bank. That's why, for example, if, let's say, you're living in a country like Guatemala for 2 or 3 years, you're finally getting the hang of the way they use Spanish down here. Your Spanish is clicking. You can talk to business and educated people sort of formally. You can make out what your cleaning lady's talking about. You can even figure out what your Uber driver's saying to you. Then suddenly you decide to visit or move to a place like Panama or Argentina, the DR. You land at the airport, getting an Uber, and then you don't know what the hell the guy's talking about. You're thinking, oh shit, what happened? I just got my mind wiped. How could one get so dumb all of a sudden? Yes, that can be a problem. That has happened to me. Anyway, if there's one thing that gringos and expats will do, that is, gringos and expats who speak a little Spanish, who miss something in translation, they don't get what a person might be saying, they just won't clam up. They'll say, can you repeat that, please? They're generally not shy about it. Whereas Latinos who know a bit of English, or maybe even a lot of English, when they hear someone speaking in English with an accent, let's say, or with street English, something they're not getting, they're not understanding, more often than not, they'll just let it go. They won't pipe up and ask you to repeat it. I don't know what it is, but it must be something in their nature. They just don't want to seem confrontational, don't want to rock the boat. Though that's not really confrontational, that's just asking a question. I mean, how hard is it to say, would you please repeat that? I didn't get it. But more often than not, they'll just smile and nod as if they got it all, and you won't be the wiser. In fact, one of my friends who owns a couple of big maquilas in Guatemala, he told me that as he expanded, he hired an English-speaking Latino to run one of those maquilas for him, be the general manager. His English was pretty good, he said. Things were running pretty smoothly, and my buddy told me it took him, my buddy, a couple of months to figure out his new English-speaking employee wasn't catching everything he was saying. But he was too embarrassed and didn't want to show his lack of understanding to his new boss. So he never did ask his new boss to repeat things more slowly. In fact, my buddy told me in the factory, when someone knows English, that happens all the time. You assume they understand your English. So if you're in that situation with workers who speak English, don't assume they're getting much of it at all. Don't be fooled if they nod and smile a lot. Doesn't matter if you say, if you have any questions, speak up. Even so, Latinos won't. Simply put, when in doubt, gringos ask a lot of questions. Latinos, not so much. Expat Eddie tells me the same thing. He's got some great workers, but they don't ask many questions. He says they'd rather take a chance and do something wrong than appear stupid and ask questions. He thinks it's a macho thing because it happens much more often with Latino males. He says when Latino ladies are a bit confused, they'll bring it up. They'll ask. Latino guys, not so much. That's why he said when he was running the restaurant businesses, he had a nice, detailed employee handbook. In Spanish, of course, which left no doubt about the correct way to do all the operations and procedures. Funny thing, too, and this was a while ago, Eddie told me that back in around 2005 to 2008, he got to meet lots of Latino restaurant and business owners, some with quite a few employees, too. And almost none of them had an employee handbook. A lot of them, though, wanted a copy of his, and he was reluctant to give it out because it takes a lot of time and effort to put one together. At least it did way back when the internet was first coming on. Now you could find hundreds of different examples on the internet. You don't have to reinvent the wheel. But it was funny to note, Eddie said, that many, many of his Latino friends who were business owners, they were university graduates in business. And Eddie, who had never went to business school or college, he had a great little detailed employee manual. And those Latino business owners didn't. Isn't that one of the main tenets they teach you at business school? Was it Latin American lag time or just a cultural thing? Or another sign of the gringo advantage? Though these days, all Latin American companies have employee manuals. And you know who ushered in that eventuality in a big way? American franchises. Taco Bell, Mickey D's, Kentucky Fried. They have turnkey operations where everything's spelled out in manuals down to the last letter. So then local chicken-licking-style franchise operators here started taking their hints from that playbook. Now, speaking of getting a head start on the competition, or just getting a big head start on your plan B, don't forget I've got another Expat Insider Seminar coming up in March 2024. We'll be kicking it off Friday, March 8th, 2024, finishing off on Friday, March 15th, 2024. So it'll be a week long, 8 days actually, two different countries, Guatemala and El Salvador. You'll be flying into Guatemala's International Airport and leaving from the same airport. Airport code GUA. So it's about time you check out those round-trip flights. Oh, and the seminar price includes 8 nights in our various hotels. And once again, for all you repeat offenders, yeah, we always have repeat offenders. Believe it or not, we've had people repeat the seminar 3 different times. So if you're wondering if the seminar is really worth it, think about that for a minute. Anyway, for all you previous attendees thinking about becoming repeat offenders, you get a $1,000 discount off the regular early bird discount price. Now, to get in on the early bird discounts, just go to expatplanb.com, click on the seminar link for all the details and sign-up info. Just go to expatplanb.com. Hope to see you there. Enough said about that. All right, moving on. How about some Christmas news coming out of Mexico City? Joy to the world. Now, get this. According to Mexico City's largest newspaper, it says Mexico's President López Obrador appealed to the country's citizens Tuesday not to accept holiday gifts, presents, or handouts from drug gangs. After videos posted online showing pickup trucks handing out loads of gifts in different cities while bystanders described the drivers as members of drug cartels. So this year Santa's got an AK-47, huh? Oh, and then it says, get this, President López Obrador said in a morning press conference, local residents receiving those gifts should not try to protect those drug traffickers, since locals will often oppose national police when stationed in their city. Then it says authorities have confirmed the source of the gifts, mostly toys to kids, have been narcos handing stuff out most exclusively in poor neighborhoods. Now, you can see pictures of narcos handing that stuff out on TikTok and Instagram. Meanwhile, convoys of trucks carrying inflatable Santa decorations and Christmas lights are popping up in all kinds of low-income neighborhoods with powerful speakers blaring narco corrido songs praising the cartels and local leaders of gangs. You've heard about those narco corrido songs, right? If you don't know what I'm talking about, the cartels will hire local and even international reggaeton artists and cowboy ranchero artists. That is, if you could call those guys artists at all. But that's another discussion. Anyway, bystanders in those video clips receiving those presents can be heard saying out loud, "Why shouldn't we accept gifts from the narcos? The government doesn't give us anything. They just take." Now, at the press conference, when asked about the videos, Lopez Obrador conceded the practice was common and part of a strategy by criminal gangs to win popular support. You think? Can you believe he actually said that? Anyway, then it goes on to say, narcos in some regions are so popular for their gifts that when there's a cocaine seizure, communities come out and defend the traffickers and even try to abduct members of the Army and National Guard to prevent the seizure of the cocaine. And get this, local residents in three different Mexican states have held demonstrations against the construction of barracks for the National Guard. They prefer the narcos in their towns to the National Guard. Then it says, most recently, the Mexican population's most massive show of local support for criminal gangs has come from fuel theft gangs that drill into government pipelines to steal gas and diesel. And after they've filled their trucks, they let the local people collect gas and diesel from those taps, which is why so many local communities fight raids by the police and the army against the narcos. Because narcos share the wealth with the locals and the government gives them nothing. So once again, in a press conference Tuesday, Mexico's president appealed to country citizens not to accept Christmas holiday handouts and gifts from drug gangs. Yeah, right. That should work. Yeah, Mr. President, that should teach those nasty cartel members a lesson. Deck the halls with boughs of stupidity. Merry Christmas to you, too.
South of the border. You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your Plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.